Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
We're often where it's like people that are super young are the ones impacting the world. And especially with social media, it's like everything is moving towards like a younger, bigger, faster, more money. And it's like each person that accomplishes something big, it seems like if they didn't do it by this age, it's like not that impressive, right? Like, I don't know. Everything seems to be getting unnormalized to the point where it's like if you're over 25, like anything you're doing is not worthwhile because someone that was like 21 years old did it, you know? And it's a very tough like mindset to get out of.
And you see everyone. You see it all. And, you know, never, my grandparents didn't have access to what some really smart kid from Boston was doing who took over his dad's business and killed it. Like, the amount of people we have access to is so crazy, and it warps our perception of everything. And I think that's why Gary Vee talks so much about, like, dude, it's good. It's okay to be 29 years old and not know what you want to do with your life because, like, it'll all work out, and you're just comparing yourself to a bunch of different things that it's all good. It's, you know, all good.
Dude, I've been thinking about that because I'm a huge Gary Vee guy too. I've been listening to him for as long as I can remember, and probably the single most impactful person on me and like what I've done up to this point, and just like mindset and perspective and things. And I wonder, like, it's going to be weird because he never talks about, I think a lot of the glamour from being young and successful has to do with, and it might sound silly, but like sex. Like the drive of sex is something that he never brings up. It's just not in his personality. But I think a lot of the reason people crave getting it done at a young age is because like our younger society is so revolved around sex. And it's like, you know, it's very, very normal, right? Like it's not actually a silly way to look at it. Especially like, I mean, you lived in New York, like you know how it is. Like you're walking down the street and you just see beautiful people all the time, right? And in your head, you're like, you know, that person's attractive. I wonder if they think I'm attractive. Like, would they, you know, get with me? Would I, vice versa? And that stuff goes through your mind all the time. So I think there's like a part of the equation that he doesn't really talk about when it comes to people wanting it when they're younger, because there is this like sexual driven tension. Like, it's cool to get it when you're 42, but if your values revolve around things that aren't as superficial, like, of course, if you're patient and you get it when you're 40, like, you'll be fine with that. But a lot of younger kids, I think their drive is maybe subconsciously like revolving around that a little bit too. And I just started thinking about that recently for whatever reason.
Well, you've been going on dates, right? You've been like pretty vulnerable about your own dating. I saw one video you had where you were like, we're going to go to a bunch of blind dates, and you went with two girls, I think.
Yeah. We went to there's like a podcast in New York called We Met at Acme, and Acme is like a bar in New York that's like pretty known for like people going and hooking up and meeting people there or whatever. And these two girls that I'm friends with listened to the podcast like religiously, and the host of the podcast was like, hey, I'm doing like a meetup for people that listen to it. It's gonna be like a singles meetup. And one of my friends texted me and was like, yo, do you want to come? It'll be fun. I was like, yeah, sure. I'm gonna vlog it though, because it's gonna be a fucking shit show probably. So that was a video we made of that. And yeah, dude, like I just enjoy the New York lifestyle and experience. And it's not to say I'm like a promiscuous person, at least not at this age anymore. It's just because dating is, it takes a lot of time and energy, man. I just like have things that I want to accomplish right now that I just don't necessarily have the energy to like give elsewhere. So yeah, I mean, I love to date, honestly. I feel like I'm one of the few people for whatever reason that actually enjoys doing it, but maybe that's more so because I like to meet people, but I don't know.
I think it's probably because you're charismatic and you're just, you enjoy putting on that charisma to more people is what I would assume. But dude, I wanted you to come here today because I think your story is so cool in the power of using social media to create the life you want. And I'd love for us to tackle it a little bit today, starting with the Beer Olympics, big dogs gotta eat, and how that has transformed your life. So take that wherever you want to take it.
Okay. So I'll give a quick background, I guess, of, or I, you know what, I'll do present day me and then kind of reverse engineer how we got here. So right now, I'm actually sitting in an office, which is my company's office, BDGE, Big Dogs Gotta Eat. We just moved into this place on March 1st, so we've been here officially 1 month. And this is our first office. Basically, I started recording YouTube videos like 6 or 7 years ago when I still lived at my mom's house in New Jersey. And a lot of that came from, I guess, two different places. I always used to watch vloggers back in the day, like on YouTube, a lot of like fitness related vloggers. So dudes like Christian Guzman, Max Tuning, and like that crew, they always inspired me. They had a really unique blend of like giving informational value that like pulled you in, but also they did a lot of behind the scenes footage that like continue to make you crave their lifestyle and who they were as people. And I always thought that shit was so cool. And when I was younger, I'd watch it and I'm like, this is so cool, but I also can do this. Like, I know that I could do this, you know? And like that kind of put the seed in my mind. And on a different spectrum, I loved fantasy football back in the day. And I still, you know, I'm still passionate about it, obviously. And me and my friends in high school were in a pretty serious league. And in the first like 5 years of the league, I think I won it like 3 or 4 times. And I was like, yo, I'm like pretty good at this fantasy football thing, or so I thought at the time. I was like, I want to like help people get better at this game. Just very, looking back on it, like very genuine, very like, I just want to help people with nothing else to it, attached to it, nothing like business wise or whatever. And I was like, okay, how do I get the message out there, right? So I started blogging, and I blogged for a little bit, and I like really, really quickly realized, I was like, dude, I don't like blogging. I'm not like a good writer. Maybe I can be a good writer, but I don't really want to put the time in to figure out whether or not I'm a good writer. But I'm much more, like you said, like charismatic on camera or like doing podcast recording. So I'd much rather go that route. And while I was blogging, you know, I started to look behind the scenes a little bit, like, you know, open the back door and see what was going on from like an internet or like analytic perspective. Because this is all very new to me. I was probably 20 years old, maybe 21 at the time when I started doing this. And I'd look at like Google Analytics and I was like, whoa, there's, you know, I wasn't promoting this. I was like really scared to put myself out there at the time. And I look at Google Analytics and I was like, yo, there's a couple thousand people coming to my website a day, like out of nowhere, completely organically. And I'm like, there's something, you know, there's something here outside of just like me doing it as a passion project. Like I can build this into something probably. So I realized I want to do videos, and I'm like, you know, where can I post these videos? Naturally, like the first platform that you think of is YouTube. No one was really doing fantasy football YouTube videos at the time. So I started doing it. I wasn't really too serious about it when I started. I probably put up like legit like 5 or 6 videos the first summer. The next summer, maybe, you know, 3 times at like 15 or 20, which is it was nothing compared to like, I do 15 videos in a couple weeks nowadays, right? And at the time, you know, I started ramping it up. But obviously, the more work I put in, the more scaling effect I saw, like very organically. And I was like, you know what? If I say fuck it and I go all in on this for like one full summer from like May until October, November, one full season, like let me see what comes of it. And that's where I really saw like a takeoff moment in terms of just like raw, like superficial numbers and analytics. But we went from probably a couple hundred subscribers from maybe 300 to 6,000, 7,000 subscribers. And I was like, oh, okay, there's like something, clearly the market is telling us there's something here, right? So I was like, this could be a full-time thing. And I always wanted to pursue something on my own. Like I always wanted to go after something. I just didn't know really what that was. I didn't know what could sustain me financially. And at the time, while I was doing this, I was working in the marketing field. So I was running like paid traffic, Facebook, Instagram ads, things like that, when they were pretty new on the scene. And I worked at a few agencies in New York. And eventually I got to the point where I was just like, I was at work and I'd go into like the kitchen area and I'd be on my laptop for like 7 of the 8 hours I was in the office working on my own shit. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Like there's no reason I should be wasting my time here when I have a very, very clear picture of maybe not the direction I want to go, but like what I'm passionate about. And I'm going to put my all behind that. And I think if you're really passionate, you have a really strong work ethic and, you know, you just put the time and energy into it, like good things will obviously come from it. And that's it's kind of like what has led me to this point. I left my last job and I was doing some of that marketing work still, like on the side as like a freelancer, just to make enough money. And then eventually like the content creation side of things emerged with the marketing side of things. And I started making more money from content creation and eventually took the leap to start doing that full time. And now I've been doing it full time for like 4 or 5 years. And for the first time ever, I'm trying to like go from just an individual you know, YouTuber, content creator, to an actual business, which is what led us to being in an actual office for the first time in 5 years. And, you know, we have full-time employees, and shit is just like, I don't know how we got here, to be honest.
It's so cool. But at the same time, you say, I don't know how we got there, but like, it does appear from looking back at your old stuff. Like, I stumbled across this blog post of yours, which I'm sure we'll touch on, which is like 14 things I've learned the hard way over the last decade, which was like your post at the end of 2019 to recap what you've been doing, where it's like you did have some vision for where you were going to take it. And you did have an idea of like, I'm really proud of myself for getting to this point, but I know that there's a 50% chance that in 5 years, I won't even be talking about fantasy football because it'll be bigger than that, or it'll be something different. So it's like you do kind of have the vision. I'm curious about one thing in particular, which is you are really good on camera. And when I watch your vlogs and when I watch you in general, my attention is hooked and I want to keep watching. What is that and how did you develop that?
Man, I wish I had a good answer for this, but for whatever reason, I just always found myself very comfortable on camera. And it was a way. I'm so grateful for like me trying out the camera thing, because when I was younger, I had a very tough time like expressing myself and being vulnerable, probably up until almost like when I started doing YouTube shit. And when Why? I would turn the dude, I don't know. I think I had this idea of like perfection, and letting people in was always a problem for me, because I didn't want to, and I knew, like, obviously I knew I wasn't like a perfect person, but like I think maybe I had this idea of who I was in my head, that like obviously no one else has an idea of perfectionism for another person. But I think when I was younger, I just struggled with that, so it was tough for me to express myself without being vulnerable, right? Like, you can't really do that. And when I turned the camera on, it was always just really easy for me to express myself. And I don't really know why that was. I really, really don't. But it's always been that way for me. So I'm able to be vulnerable. And as I've grown as a person, a lot of the stuff was off camera stuff, different relationships that were tough for me to really like take to the next level, because I was unable to be truly myself or truly vulnerable. And when those things come to an end, because of that being the reason, you start to be a little more introspective and you start to ask yourself like, yeah, is it worth being like this? Do we need to change? And for me, of course, the answer was like yes, and kind of made a promise to myself after one of those incidences that like, you know, you could do it on camera, but like you need to start doing this in every aspect of your life. And I think once you can really come to terms with that and do it with your friends, and if they don't like accept you after that, then obviously they were never your real friends to begin with, but like with your family, and they're there to support you anyways. So I started trying to do that in every aspect of my life, and it's been like very freeing for me, from, you know, personal work side of things. Like everything kind of starts to mesh into one, and it becomes like just a freeing experience that you can like overlap life with work, with relationships, with friends, at least at where I'm at in life right now.
What were some of the steps you took to actually become more introspective?
I wish I could say it was like a smooth process, but it wasn't. It was really like being conscious of it and like making a concerted effort. And I think that's a lot of things in life, man. Like, yeah, hold on a second. Let me try to turn this shit down. I think that's a lot of things in life. Like, people have this magical fucking idea in their mind of how things are going to shift or how things are going to work or how things are going to come to be. But 90% of the time, it's you fucking with your nails against the chalkboard, just trying to figure it out. And like, it never really feels good until eventually your body just adapts to it. So it's like, it's one, being aware that you need to be conscious of it, and being aware that you need to take actionable steps in order for things to change, and then doing that, right? Because a lot of the times it's like, being aware, I think, is the thing that people have a really tough time of grasping. So when you could be aware, understand that this is like an okay problem to have, like don't judge yourself from it, and then being aware, don't judge yourself from it, and then taking actionable steps. And it might take you a long time. Like, you might be aware and then be in a situation where you could like build onto it and be like, okay, this is a good chance for me to be vulnerable, and not get it, right? And not do it, right? Still not be ready for it. So I think it's like, it's just being okay with yourself and realizing that it's going to be really fucking uncomfortable to do a lot of things that are worthwhile in life.
It's funny because you writing as the second thing in that list, being vulnerable is the only way to do meaningful things, is funny. And it shows you had some idea of that problem, or at least that you were tackling it at that point. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I want to touch on was three on the list of 14 was the third one was you'll figure out things you don't like way faster than things you do. What do you mean by that one?
So I had, I want to say I had like five full-time jobs by the time I was like 22 or 23. And I don't mean like, you know, ice cream shop, like working at the movie theater type shit. I mean like in a corporate setting, like going through the entire interview process and onboarding and 401k type shit. Like I was just very, very comfortable getting into a position, realizing that I fucking hated it, and being okay to pivot, right? Like I was okay with people judging me at, like when those things occurred in my life. And I think most people are not okay doing the same. But I literally, if I can give myself, if I can give younger people one piece of advice from like 10 years ago, it's legit. As soon as you realize that you don't like something, it's not your future, it's not something that you want to invest into, do not waste more time on it. Like, it'll be okay if you pivot, man, because I don't know, a lot of people start to think of, you know, what happens if I leave this job and go to another job? People start to judge me, people ask questions. It's like, you also, you know, most people don't know what they want to do, right? It's way easier to realize what you've, when you're in a position, it's like, oh, this is cool, or I hate this. And if you can start to slowly go down a path of things that you kind of like you just come to, life is just a bunch of fucking forks in the road, man, right? Like you hit a fork, you hit a fork, you hit a fork, go down the one that you don't hate. And then eventually it's going to lead you to things that you like. Like, you know, I kind of like always saw myself in this position. Like I kind of knew I'd be here eventually, but I had no idea how I was going to get there. You just iterate on things that fuel you and fire you up. And if you find that, you know, you might have to take one step back to take three steps forward. Like this is not telling people to quit their jobs or do anything drastic like that. If it's going to put you in a position that you know you're going to enjoy down the road, maybe it's time to eat shit for a little while. But realistically, man, it's just very, very easy for people to know what they don't like and pivot. There's always like an alternative of things that aren't that much worse at the other side of the fork.
Yeah, something that I was just thinking about earlier today was like we have an internal compass so often of, oh, am I on the right path or am I not? Like we do know. And so one part of that is like from childhood, like, okay, what were the things you were doing when you were a child, when you were young? Were there any signs when you were younger that you'd be interested in media or interested in communicating or fantasy football? Like how young does this stem for you?
It's a great question. You know what? I don't know if there's any particular actions I took, but I do remember being obsessed with people that would carry around camcorders. And especially in like the skateboard community, I always thought that like people who like documented their friends and shit while they were like skateboarding, those are the only people that I feel like did it at the time. I was like, dude, that is like the coolest thing in the world. And I never like capitalized on it or anything, or I never bought a camcorder, but I remember when I was younger, I always wished it. And then when I got into high school, like I had a really fun high school experience, and I always wished that I had documented it, and I always wished that I had filmed my friends more, like even just us on the weekends going out and partying or whatever. And I was like, damn, this is like something really funny and unique, and I thought I could share it for sure. I just never really capitalized on it. So I think I had a lot of these thoughts throughout my like childhood that I never ended up putting action behind. But again, it goes back to like life is about doing things or not doing them. Like it's just a conscious choice about whether you're going to go down that path or you're not. Again, there's no like magic. There's no one that shows up at your doorstep with the perfect job offer or anything like that. Like you just got to actively, consciously make this choice, no matter how uncomfortable it is, and go with it. And I never did that when I was younger. There were these glimpses that I remember like feeling very passionately about, but never really went after.
It's so funny about the documenting thing too. It's one of my biggest regrets from working out and from just like life in general is I always looked at people who whipped out their phone when I was in high school and college as like, oh, that person's not actually living in the moment. But I was just judging that person, and I wish I had those memories and I wish I documented those experiences. Was it the same for you where you were like judging, or it was just like it wasn't in your mind to even do it?
Dude, definitely judging. I still fuck, dude, weird as it is, if I walk down a street in New York and someone's like filming themselves, I'm like, what's this fucking asshole doing right now?
And you're a vlogger and you
correct.
Do that.
Correct.
That's wild. What is
I'm
that
not
thought?
Really, well, here's the thing. I'm still like really not comfortable vlogging in public as much as, you know, I know you've seen like me having bits and pieces of it. I don't do that often though. Like I don't do it personally where I'm like walking around filming myself in public. If we're doing vlogs that are out in public, it's usually someone else filming me or us or whatever. And if I do other individual vlogs, a lot of time it's just like me at my desk talking into the camera. So I don't do the whole like public thing that often. And I realize like something I realized very, very quickly is like that judgment on that person is not because like I'm like they're weird or they're a loser. It's literally just from a like I wish I was not cowardice enough to just whip it out and do it. Like that's where that comes from. And I'm again, it's good to be very aware of that, but it's also very tough to like build on that awareness, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So what first comes to mind is the Kanye documentary where he's having
so good
Cootie film him when he's no one and no one believes in him. Did you watch that and you have that same feeling of like, wow, this is cool. Documenting is amazing.
Dude, I thought it was so phenomenal. And I was surprised it didn't get more like hype up. As soon as I watched that, you could ask the dudes in my office. I literally sent them a text and I was like, yo, Kanye documentary, Netflix, episode one. We're going to watch it at the office and we're watching game film as if we just played a fucking sporting event. I was like, this is how you document a motherfucking like series. This is how you document something. I thought the way Cootie, like the fact that the entire first episode was like an hour and a half long and there wasn't a single interview, like there wasn't a single real time thing. It was all footage from back then. Like I thought that was the coolest shit ever. And some of the shots that Cootie had was just, it was so inspiring, man. It just, I loved every piece of that documentary. And I just think something like that is so, that little piece of content right there, the 1 hour piece of content can wipe away 5 years of negative energy towards Kanye. You so have true. This, you know what I mean? Like this buildup of people don't even really know who Kanye is anymore. They just think of him as this crazy person now that's mixed up with the Kardashians. You watch that and you're like, fuck yo, I like Kanye again. I love that dude. You know what I mean?
Why is that? Because we see ourselves deep within?
Dude, it's that vulnerability, man. Like you see, it's like everyone wants to talk about like the work ethic and the grind, but when you see it, it's so respectable. It's like you have no choice but to love it and respect it, because a lot of it's like wishing you could have done that, and you just really, really respect and fall in love with people that were willing to actually put themselves outside the box.
So what is your equivalent of a song? So for Kanye put out songs and that was his craft and he was getting better at creating songs. And for you, is it videos? Is it podcasts? How do you view is it media in general? Like, how are you viewing a song? What's a song to you?
Okay. I didn't understand the question at first, but it makes total sense now. Yeah. Like I would say, like one individual sit down video at my desk. As it relates right now to fantasy football, as I open up this new YouTube channel, it'll probably be a little bit more focus on that, but it is sitting down and we have a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. Like, you know, we have these employees and I'm trying to figure out fucking health benefits for them. And I'm trying to order furniture for the office and I'm doing podcasts with you and I'm doing a million things. Right. And like at the end of the day, 95% of this happens because I sit down and do that video. Like that video, everything else, all the petty shit falls in line and takes care of itself when I do that. And that requires like a very, very deep type of work. I need to sit down, prepare and research for those videos for 4, 5, 6 hours at a time. Then I sit down, record it. And it's almost like a game. It's like you practice and practice and practice all summer. So when you show up, it's not about whether or not you're ready. You're already ready. You've been preparing for it. So it's like I sit down, rip off that 30-minute video, and my business will continue to run itself as long as I do like that deep conscious work right there. So my song is my video, me sitting at my desk, and that's when I'm like most comfortable.
You mentioned the YouTube channel. What's that all about, and why you creating another YouTube channel on top of everything you already have?
Yeah, so that's it's something that I decided to do a few months ago, because in the off season, like this time when it's not the NFL season, I get to focus on different, more fun projects for me, right? Whether it's more related to content creation or more looking at the business side of things, like what are we going to invest into this year? What kind of content can I make around that? Like, you know, all stuff like that is really probably the most enjoyable part of my life to me. And I had done an interview series each offseason with people in the fantasy sports space where I'd interview them, but it was only related to people that I thought were like innovating within the space from a branding, marketing, social, business perspective. And I'd kind of got to the point, I've done it for like 3 or 4 years in a row now, and I got to the point where I was kind of like running out of people that I was necessarily like inspired by. And I was like, you know what, this is too narrow of a lane for me. And at this point, I'm pretty well versed in the content creation side of things that I feel comfortable, I think, taking the reins on this and really teaching most of the aspects of this entire cycle, like myself, to an audience. So I was like, you know what, rather than trying to do a series for this, so what I was going to do was like make one series that we had on our main BDG channel. And it was like the A to Z content creation, go from an idea all the way to full-time monetization. And I was going to make a series out of it and be like really well-produced and make it like a whole thing. But I was like, dude, this is going to be an expressive outlet for me. I think this is what it's going to turn into, like a personal outlet for me. So why not just make a YouTube channel that I could post whatever I want on there? Yeah, I could still do the series if I want, where it's like 12 episodes and then continue to iterate on that. Because very similar to when I started this, like at the root of it, the YouTube channel for me was like just a creative expression and I could do whatever I wanted to, right? And now it's kind of taken on a mind of its own where we have other players in the brand and we have other people making content for us. So that switch came natural. It was like, this is going to be the BDGE YouTube channel, the BDGE side of things, not just Nick. So we've transitioned into that and it's no longer a creative outlet for me. It's what's ever best for the business going forward. Now this other YouTube channel will basically be me from step one again when I started BDG, but now it's like my own personal creative outlet. So it's like kind of coming full circle. And what I think is going to be fun is like teaching people how to go from A to Z on the content side of things is you're going to be able to watch me do it on that channel. Like that channel in 2 years from now will probably be a small time business in itself. Like I will probably be able to support myself full time from that channel and you'll be able to watch every step of the way. Cause I'm not only teaching it through videos, but you're going to watch me actually like physically do it through that channel, you know?
Yeah. I love it, man. And what I loved also was you said, I'm not going to sell you anything for at least the first 18 months because that's what the internet is all about. And it just really hit me because I was doing this podcast and I started thinking about, okay, how can I make some money from this podcast? But I only started thinking about that in the last couple of months after doing it for 18 months. And it was just like, it was interesting to me that we both came to the same conclusion separately. Why 18 months before monetizing from your perspective?
I mean, there's just like this purity of building a relationship with the audience that gets skewed as soon as you start to try to sell something. Yeah. And I mean, you could look at it from two ways. For me, that again, that's going to be a creative outlet for me. That's just a way for me to express myself. And that gets fucked up if you're turning that into a money source. Like, I just don't want to do that personally on a personal level. Two, ironically, again, that is the best way to actually sell. If you can go 2 years without selling anything, the minute you try to sell something, if all you've done for 2 years is give someone fucking value, they trust you, like undoubtedly, unfazably, you know? So as soon as you try to sell them something, they're like, this dude has given me an unbelievable amount of advice and value into my life. I trust that whatever he's selling is going to continue to provide value to my life. So I'm thinking about like the first, you know, year and a half, and I want it like pure and I want it unadulterated. And I want people to understand that they could trust me, right? Because as soon as you cross that threshold of trying to sell, the relationship changes a little bit, you know? So for me, it's an outlet for me. And it's just about trying to build the trust with the audience. And most people are in a hurry to try to monetize. I'm fortunately in a place like personally where I don't have to rush. And that also should factor into your equation, of course. But I really think you're doing yourself a disservice if you try to monetize early, because it's just a diminishing return, like the earlier you try to. And it becomes a problem long term if you continue to try to monetize, I think.
For somebody like me, you've built a a brand around a specific niche of fantasy football, and now you're gonna build another brand around helping people create content businesses. For someone like me, I've never really said to myself, I'm a niche or I'm in a niche. I said to myself, I'm gonna interview interesting people to me and talk to them. And yeah, you could loosely find a niche there, but what would you recommend to someone like me who hasn't really settled down on a niche after like 2 years of putting out content?
Do you mean what would I recommend to you in terms of like direction or monetization options?
Either.
So I think, I mean, directionally, I think you should continue doing what you're doing if that's what's like fulfilling you. And if like you seem really happy doing the interviews that you're doing, so I wouldn't ever suggest like going off that. Because as soon as you start going down a lane where you're not really as passionate about it, that's when burnout becomes a thing for content totally. Creators. And I've been there many times. And monetization, man, like I think there's a lot of different options depending on what you think the value. I think one of the mistakes a lot of content creators make is not being able to actually line up the value that they're giving their audience and what they're trying to sell, right? Like as long as the product is giving the same value, it'll line up like perfectly. So I think there's like three ways to give value realistically through content, right? It's through entertainment, it's through information, it's through motivation, and then whatever product you're selling, right? Those are basically the only three ways I think you can do it. And then the product you're selling will match up to that. So you could see a lot of, you see like TikTokers, like comedy people, right? Or like Barstool Sports or whatever. They're all entertainment, right? So monetization options through entertainment value, for me, it looks like merch is a huge thing for them, right? And you see people monetizing in really creative ways. Like the comedy people on TikTok didn't go through the ropes of, you know, the comedy club here or the Greenwich Village Comedy Club or Gotham Comedy Club, right? They got really big audiences on TikTok and then reached out to these places and probably like, let me get a spot at your comedy club. So they're like taking the old way of thinking and using the social media way and connecting the entertainment with entertainment. They have the audience online and say, hey guys, if you want to buy tickets to see me, they got a million people on TikTok. They can sell out 50 seats at any comedy club that they want to in the fucking world. So with information, you could do something like group class sessions on like Zoom, you know, where it's almost like a group or a community. You can do an informational product, whether it's just like an online membership site, Patreon, things like that, I think go well. Like if people come to you because they value the information that you're giving them, what they want to pay for is either more information that you haven't given out yet, or what I've found as well is a lot of people don't actually pay for exclusive content. They pay for the organization of that content. So if you have a whole lot of shit and you can organize it into something that's like packaged neatly, easily for people to consume or easy for them to like, you know, maneuver around and navigate, people will absolutely pay for that. So it really is dependent on the value that you feel you're giving out to your audience and then connect the product or service or whatever it is to that. But as soon as you cross swords there, it becomes a problem. Whereas like, I see it a lot in fantasy football. We have a lot of brands who are not giving out value via entertainment. They're like very informational, very analytical, and then they try to sell merch. And I'm like, listen, people might like your shit, but like that's an entertainment value type of monetization. That's the way I look at it. And like you're going to sell two t-shirts or some shit because people aren't like super fucking excited to wear your stuff because you're not like, you know, you're not funny. They're not like, they don't really give a fuck, to be honest with you. That's at the end of the day, that's really what it comes down to. So, you know, crossing swords becomes a problem, but if you can figure out what type of value you're giving, you can kind of reverse engineer the product that you want to be serving to your audience.
What's been the most valuable product or service that you've sold with BDG?
So we develop this, what we call a draft guide every summer. So basically people playing in fantasy football leagues, their draft is coming up in, you know, September 1st or whatever, right? And they need to know at a very high level what players to take, what players to avoid, what our rankings are or whatever. And most of this information we're doing, I mean, listen, I'm going to put out fucking 90 to 100 videos in the span of like June, July, and August, strictly just prepping people for their draft and the upcoming fantasy football season. Most of everything I put into the draft guide will be available somewhere on YouTube for free. You'll hear all, if you listen to every fucking ounce that comes out of my mouth, you'll know how I feel about most of these players. The draft guide basically takes the best content we have from that and packages it, organizes it so that you don't need to scour through hours and hours and hours of our footage or our content or our podcast or whatever. And it just gives you exactly what you need for that precise moment. So it's like the value we're giving out through our videos in August and July and whatever is telling you who to draft, who not to draft. The product we're selling is that, just fucking organized. So it lines up perfectly. And that's by far and away been our most profitable product.
And the people who watch every second will probably also buy the draft guide because they respect your brand and appreciate your input too, right?
Yeah, and yeah, we have people that are like, dude, I don't need the draft guide. I don't even play fantasy football anymore, but like I fuck with your brand. I fuck with the hustle. Like I'm just going to buy it to support it. So you just build that up like slowly. And I don't know, man, as long as your intention is right. The other thing too, when it comes to like selling is like you have to believe in your product. You really, really do. And when you do, it's not like a question. It's not like a do I not? It's like if you actually believe you're giving value to the audience, like that's going to come through in your pitch. Like when you're selling shit, like, dude, how many podcasts you listen to with just horrible ad reads that you don't, there's no shot you believe these people use the product that they're fucking talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't have ads because I haven't found a product that I would say, get this, even if I wasn't being paid to say it.
Exactly. We work with so few sponsors. I almost look at like, if you're a content creator, these sponsors can pay you to talk about their shit, or you could use that minute to plug your own shit. You get all the profit. You control what the actual product is. So if it's not good, if it's not up to par, you fucking change it. And you're the one who believes in the product itself. So it's like you become an influencer for yourself, right? Like I'm influencer marketing for BDGE, but I'm a part of BDGE, of course. You know what I mean? So like rather than promoting some fucking, I don't know, a car company, like why not just pitch our product and reap all the benefits from it? And we're very selected, like Felix Gray, right? They're one of our like very, very few sponsors. I reached out to them and I fucking hounded them. I'm like, dude, I've been using your product for years. Like I pitch you guys in videos for no fucking reason that we're not even working together. Like here's some clips of me doing that. It's a natural fit because I believe so strongly in your product. So like, work with us, you know, and that's how I believe any sort of monetization or partnerships should be.
Yeah. For me, this goes back to one of your points in this 14 things that you've learned the hard way, which is you can't love anything until you love yourself. For me, this was about when I love myself, I was then able to speak freely and be able to say what is actually on my mind because, dude, I don't need you for anything. I just love myself. I'm good here. I'm whole. And so if you love the product and you're whole with the product, you don't care whether or not anyone buys it or not because you're just like, this is genuinely what I actually support. So.
Yeah, dude, I couldn't agree with that more. It's like you just represent yourself and everything that you like. You got to understand that your name is on everything that you put out there. Like, be proud of it. Like, put the fucking work in and like make it your own. And don't be afraid to step outside the box a little bit. And when you can really come to terms with that, like you have this shift change in your mind. You really do.
Yeah. What is the 40-year-old regret game?
You know, Gary Vee talks about regret a lot. He's like, you know, when you're older, like the only thing that you really live by is what you regret doing or not doing or whatever. So when I come to a big decision in my life, I put myself in my brain as if I was an older person, 40, 50, 60, whatever age, you know, I want to imagine. And I say like, will I regret having done this? Or will I regret having not done this? And if the answer is like, yeah, I'll regret having done it, I literally, like, this is not cliche. This is not, like, content to put on TikTok. It's literally, like, that's how I operate. Like, if the answer is, yeah, I'll regret it, it's like, fuck, okay. Like, I have to do this now, you know? Even if it means, like, taking short-term L's for a year, 2 years, 3 years in order for me to not regret doing something, good with that. Like, for instance, The Office is something that, I mean, this is a massive personal financial investment that I had to make to get this office here and to have these full-time employees. And I could have gone on as an individual YouTube content creator and been set with money for a long time and been very, very comfortable. And the more I took that money to supplement my personal life. I don't want to say the less satisfied I was, but the less return of satisfaction I got from it. So I'm like, dude, the only thing that really, and this might be fucked up, but the only thing that really fulfills me is like building this brand, building the business. Why not take all that personal shit you were doing or investing in, flip it into the business and go from there? Because I know if I look back in 15 years and I'm in the same spot doing the same videos, working by myself, not being around other creative people, not being fulfilled by their energy, I'm going to have regretted that, you know? So it's like, I look at that as a no fucking brainer decision. And I think a lot of people struggle with doing that. They don't like taking the short-term L's because they probably question whether or not, one, I mean, I think you always have to question the long-term because like nothing is certain, right? Like nothing we're doing is certain. But if you have a belief in what you're doing, you know, I always knew I'd be here, right? I didn't know I'd be here, but I fucking knew it in my brain. So I was like, as long as you keep going down that path, like you'll get there eventually. If you have that belief, there's no reason to go down another path.
When you say you're playing the regret game, do you think filming in public is going to be one of the things that you're going to regret? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yes, for sure. And I like fight myself with this weekly, if not daily. There are just so many things that I want to be doing more of. And maybe I'll challenge myself after this podcast to do so.
Let's go.
Yeah, that would definitely fall into that line of thinking for sure.
What is something that you're putting off right now?
Probably that second YouTube channel. And a part of me, like, I have excuses as to why I've not done it, and I know they're reasonable, but I think I know myself enough to know that it's more than just, like, a practical or logistical reason I'm not doing it. So I wanted to make sure that the office was set up, right, and everything was running without me, because I don't want to, like, abandon BDG as a whole when they're going to need me. But I know this second YouTube channel is going to take a lot of energy. So I told myself, as soon as we have the office set up and it's running by itself for a couple weeks, then I could start on, you know, the second YouTube channel. There's also that other side of me that's like, you're scared to do it because it's not going to be perfect and you don't know how it's going to go and it's not going to be amazing off the fucking rip. And that's probably like the more realistic scenario of why I'm not doing it, because again, I wanted to have it as like a series, and I wanted to show myself off as a creator, like a different side of me that I haven't even seen before, but my audience hasn't seen before, and be like, oh fuck, like this is some cool shit. Like Nick's taking himself to the next level as a creator. And I thought of it in my head, I was like, I want to do the series where it's like the A to Z, but I want them all to be like 30 to 45 minutes, hour long episodes that are like really well produced and like really cool. And I'm talking about like traveling to different places just to do like a little scene of this episode. But I realized how much time, energy that would take to do it. So now I'm like in this battle with myself, like, do I still want to do it that way? Or do I just do it how I built up BDGE and consistency? You know, just give value to the audience, consistency, the production will come over time and things like that. So it's kind of an internal battle I'm actually having right now. And I assume that was going to come up on this podcast today, to be honest.
You knew that I was going to look at
all
the... It was
going to be a therapy session.
Exactly, yeah. Bro. That's what I'm here for, to act as a mirror. But it's just a matter of, you know, it'll never be perfect and... You know, it won't likely be perfect on day one. And the more we give ourselves opportunity to grow into it, is the better it'll be. Like this podcast, for example, was just me talking to people on the phone for an hour. And then it became me talking to people without a camera, then with a camera. And soon it'll be in person. It's just like the evolution. And I think when we want it to be something incredible, we don't give credit to the process itself of like, wow, how amazing it is that it got built to that point. How amazing is BDG that it got built from your mom's house? Like, there's something beautiful about that.
Oh, it's so beautiful. It's like the most beautiful thing in the world, the whole process about everything. And I'm just so misaligned on it right now, because I'm talking about how like, oh, I want to start over and teach you how to do it from A to Z, but I'm expecting BDGE type production and quality when that's not what I'm doing right now. So I need to start it from A if I want to fucking do it. So I guess like, I guess I just got to shut the fuck up and do the work.
Who are some of the people along your journey who have helped you that you look at and you're like, wow, like I'm here because of this person?
For real, Gary Vee has been a really, really big inspiration for me, from both like an emotional, but a lot of times practical side of things, and helping me see, you know, what's there, what's not there. And more importantly, like giving yourself permission to do things, right? Because I think you need to find people that you look up to that are kind of similar to you, that are successful, right? Like I think you actually tweeted something out, I think yesterday or 2 days ago, about how you're like becoming the person that you needed when you were younger, right? And I actually wrote about that in the blog post. It's one of the numbers. I was like, I am showing up as the person that I wish I had when I was 21 18. Years old. Yeah, 18, whatever it was, right? Because like you need someone that you think is like cool and inspiring to kind of break the limits for you and be successful, and then tell you that it's okay to take the path to get there. Otherwise, it's tough. Otherwise, you have this vision of success from only people that don't actually align with who you are, you know? And then you're like, fuck, do I need to only go down that path in order to be successful? But as soon as someone like breaks the mold for you, and a lot of that was Gary Vee for me, it was like I was doing a lot of the things that he was already doing, like the whole documentation thing and all of the actual physical things I was doing before he was like kind of talking about them. But when he did it, it was like, oh, okay, I'm definitely going along the right path. Like it's giving me permission to continue doing that kind of stuff. So Gary Vee for sure. I even look around the space, the fantasy space, and I see people building really, really strong brands and businesses and inspiring me for sure. Andy Holloway, the fantasy footballers, they've built probably the single most successful business in the space right now. And Andy was the first guy that came on that interview series I did behind the scenes. He was someone, you know, at that time I probably had a couple thousand subscribers, and the footballers were huge at the time, you know, and he definitely did not have to fucking respond to me or answer to me or come onto the show and give me a couple hours of his time. But I'm super glad he did, because that one created a friendship between himself and me, and he's someone that I can go to if I'm like, yo, like you guys are obviously ahead of me in a business sense and we're in the same space. So like, can you, you know, give me a little glimpse on like what you did when you ran into a problem here, or like how you guys handled this? And his name also being big, like unlocked doors for me, as I'm sure you're probably realizing now with like you putting out content with these heavy hitting people, you know, it gets eyeballs on you that you likely wouldn't have had otherwise. And then when you reach out to someone, it's like, hey, we just had XYZ on the show. I'd love to have you next. They're like, oh, cool. I want to be associated with those people. So it's like a mixed match of people like that who have inspired me through their generosity, their work ethic, their creativity, and just things like that, man.
What were some of the things that happened along your journey where you went the wrong path? Or is there anything that pops out of like, wow, like I shouldn't have taken that route?
It's a tough question to answer, only because what I've done has been like a really long process. And sometimes I think about like the modern day small to medium-sized business is basically being built through content creators. Like we are the modern-day small and medium-sized businesses. Whereas, and there's still obviously so many startups and like tech startups and shit, that seems like a question more suitable for those companies, where it's like you have deadlines, you have black and white things that happen to you. You know, your pitch hit or it didn't hit. You met this deadline or you didn't hit this deadline. You raised this money or you didn't. Whereas the things that I've dealt with have always been like a 6 to 7 year process, where these things come and it's like, it's never make or break. It's never, nothing will, we've built such a foundation that like, if something goes wrong tomorrow, it's fine. Like we are okay. Like we could pivot to go to something else, because our success is not built on a tactic. You know what I mean? It's built on consistency and foundation. So of course there's always things I wish, like I wish I got into YouTube earlier. And when I did get into YouTube, I wish I was more consistent with it earlier on. I wish, you know, maybe I wish I started to try to scale the business earlier on. But, you know, at that point, it's like you like to think that the time that you didn't do those things led you to what you're doing now. And it's very easy to take that approach. But I really feel like there aren't a lot of things I would have done differently, because I feel very well-rounded in my craft. You know, I feel very well-rounded. And that only comes from just like fucking up every part of the process.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm curious, you've spent so much time looking at content and you love media, it seems like. So I'm curious, from your perspective, what makes for good content?
What makes for good content? I think at the root of it, man, is just giving, I think just giving value to an audience is like numbers 1, 2, and 3. Like, I really dislike, I still to this day, I don't really look at YouTube analytics almost ever. I don't, like the first 2 or 3 years I made content, I didn't have a microphone. My camera was awful. I still don't know how to do lighting. Like, to this, for the first 5 years, I didn't have a fucking light on anything I was doing. But we were able to grow because the only thing I cared about was giving good value to people, right? If you can bring people in and give them information that they didn't know beforehand, or make them think differently about something that they did have an opinion on beforehand, that is like beautiful content. Most people at the end of the day won't be able to be purely entertaining, right? There are a select few people. I don't consider myself to be one of those people. I think like I'm charismatic enough that I would consider my content like a mixed joint of entertainment and information, but I know where I stand pretty much, right? And it's information. I'm like, dude, if I can do the research to find numbers, find XYZ to deliver this to people that they didn't know about this beforehand, that's what I think makes great content. I don't think it's production value. I don't think it's these tactics, these like, how do I get people to hang on for long? Like, that might work for some people, but for me, what I've found is just like that's never felt right for me. So it's always like doing right by your audience for me has always been the right thing for making good content.
Spoken like a true Gary Vee disciple. I love it. Nick, anything else you'd like to touch on before we come to a close?
Not really in particular. I'm curious, you know, from your side, I'd like to maybe flip the interview spotlight a little bit. You're investing almost all your time and energy into these interviews.
Yeah, this is what I love.
Yeah, it sounds like I could tell you genuinely seem like the happiest person on Twitter, and it's like it's partly inspiring, it's partly maddening, it's partly like just seeing you so happy. I'm like, fuck.
That's yeah, what dude. Bale says.
Yeah, because it's just like, fuck, dude. Like, I wish I had time to just like sit back, relax, and like enjoy life a little bit. But I have a lot of trouble living in the moment and just like always trying to push forward because I don't know. I just feel like there's so much to like accomplish. But again, it goes back to loving the process. So I guess like for you, ideally, like where do you see yourself? Like where would you like to be in 5 years? Would you like to just be doing what you're doing now, just at a very grand scale, like sitting on a stage with some of the most incredible minds in the world and just having a conversation?
Yeah, I want to be our generation's Oprah, our generation's Joe Rogan. I love connecting with people. I love teasing out their stories to create. And I feel as if I have some sort of gift to do research and to get it out of people. And I know that I'm nowhere close to what I want to be. So I have the gift of work ethic and the gift of just won't give up. And I just have a strong desire to give this energy to more and more people.
Dude, work ethic will get you 98% of the way. I can, as someone who is like more recently, but for I guess a long time, bringing people onto my team and having people kind of just like be on the team, be off the team, the one constant is that the people that have stayed are just work ethic fucking animals, man. Like you could teach skills. You could teach the hard skills. Like talent, so fucking overrated, bro. Like talent, sure. I think there's like a limit. You know, if you want to hit a ceiling of being like the number one in something, of course you have to have the talent. But like the 98% in the middle on the spectrum comes from fucking work ethic and just like being aware of like who you are and what you want to accomplish, man. But yeah, keep that work ethic up. I'm sure like all this compounding work will absolutely pay off for you down the road. And like, you'll be able to unlock really cool opportunities for yourself. When I first started to like decide to scale up and I was like, okay, we're going to get these employees, we're going to get the office or whatever. I was like, man, do I have enough money to fucking do this? Do we need to actually raise a seed round? Like, do I need to raise money? And the first thing I did was get in touch with like 15 people that I interviewed on that business series, not for investment, but literally for advice for people that have been through the ringer, and just to pick their brains on like anything that I'm overlooking or how the process works. And by the way, the fundraising process is fucking fascinating and so, so difficult to wrap your head around. But what I found was I'd ask these people questions for like 30, 45 minutes or whatever. And at the end of them, like half of them were like, by the way, when you do start fundraising, like I'm in to invest, like I want to be on board with it. And I read this quote like 30 minutes, but the fucking notification popped up on my calendar like in 30 minutes. I read this quote like a month ago that was like, if you ask people for money, they'll give you advice. If you ask people for advice, they'll give you money. Wow. And I thought, I was like, damn, like that hit home, because that's exactly like, Danny, like you're interviewing all these people, you're creating this like relationship with them that in their mind puts you on par with them. Like we, you and me can have a very honest, like real person to person conversation right now. So like you're in my circle now, you're in my like network and my circle. And I'm like, I'm no different than he is. Like, sure, maybe like this business is different than what you have going on in your life, but on a person to person level, it's like you want to be included with those people. You know what I mean? So it's like, I just thought the quote was fascinating because I found that to be very, very on point with like the process I had just gone through.
Why did you end up not going through the rounds of funding?
I guess I hadn't kind of turned over every rock in terms of like being able to finance it myself. So luckily we've been able to bootstrap the whole thing. And as long as, you know, we continue to be profitable and successful, we'll be able to continue down that path. But I got some advice from a few successful people that I trust very, very closely. And they were like, don't take money right now. You don't need it. Figure it out along the way. Here are like solutions X, Y, Z, if you run into this. So I'm going to bootstrap it for as long as I humanly can. And then if we need to raise money, then I could always do that, you know?
Hell yeah. Well, it's cool following your journey of just the, it's crazy because 99% of the world doesn't know who you are and doesn't know. And like, I say that with the, in the most complimentary way of like, holy smokes, you've built something amazing for yourself, built an entire company online, shown your face. But like, if you walk down the street, I'm sure you get recognized, but it doesn't happen every day is what I would imagine. And so what a cool position to be in. And it's really cool to watch that journey unfold from the distance.
Yeah, dude, that's like the beautiful part about it is like most people don't realize that you can do that. Like you can build something really cool and also not be like super viral, you know? And that's what I think like the goal of my new channel will be, is like to teach people that like you don't, like I'm fucking living proof of it. It's been my life for the last like bunch of years that you don't need to be a viral sensation to, you know, go after your dreams and kind of build whatever the fuck you want. Cause there's just, social media has like skewed the perspective of, again, going back to how we started this conversation, like younger, more money, better looking, all of that kind of stuff is just not true. It's true for like the top 0.005% of people, but like who the fuck wants to be those people realistically, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's definitely going to be the title of this episode, is like something along those lines of, you don't need a viral hit to make it. But Nick, what an honor. What a pleasure. Where can we send people to connect with you further?
I'm on Twitter at just my name, Nick Ercolano. That will be, the YouTube channel is up as well. So if you search my name, you'll be able to find that. And then if you happen to fuck with fantasy sports or any sports in general, BDG, Big Dogs Gotta Eat, you'll be able to find it if you type it in, hopefully, somewhere, if we're doing our job correctly.
What's the best platform for
engaging with me? Yeah, personally, Twitter or Instagram is fine, at Nick Ercolano on both of those.
Cool. We'll put those below. Thank you, Nick. I really appreciate you taking the time. Cool to connect with somebody on that journey too, even though you're many years ahead, but it's still very cool to connect.
I'm only years ahead because I'm literally years ahead. Like I'm old. That's why, Danny.
We're the same age or a couple years older, but you're a couple years old, but still very cool. Really appreciate you, man.
Thank you for having me, man. I these kind of conversations are like really what fuels me and drives me and makes me passionate about stuff. To have people like you, you know, really working your fucking dick off, it inspires me for real.
Yeah, likewise.